So today in our Eucharistic prayer, we'll be using Eucharistic prayer number 4, by the way. But Eucharistic prayer number 4 is this beautiful summary of salvation history. And there's a part of the prayer that you can listen for today that says, "We give you praise, Father most holy, for you are great, and you fashioned all your works in wisdom and love. You formed man in your own image and entrusted the whole world to his care, so that in serving you alone, the Creator, he might have dominion over all creatures." So I mentioned a few weeks ago that we're going to be starting this preaching series as an overview of the Old Testament. So today I want to talk about the story of creation, the seven-day creation story, where God created the world in 7 days. Now, for some people, the question arises right away when we start talking about the seven-day creation story. Well, did it literally happen in 7 24-hour periods or not? Well, not necessarily. Because for us as Catholics, science and religion, by the way, they're not opposed to each other. That we can have faith and reason together. Because, oh, by the way, a little aside, that whole Big Bang theory that exists out there that some people try to use to disprove religion, fun fact, it was actually a Catholic priest who came up with that idea. So, wrap your head around that one. But that's a little aside. But what I want to talk about today is the seven-day creation story. That it's the story of creation revealing to us the truth of God and who he is and who we are and what our purpose is. And laid out in this poetic way. Now, we've probably heard of the creation story, especially in our kids' Bibles or in catechism class many times, but I think sometimes, I don't know about you, but sometimes I know when I would hear it, it's like, yeah, 7 days of creation, first day God made stuff, then eventually God made more stuff, and whoop-de-doo, God made a bunch of stuff, and here we are. But that there's a lot more layers of rich meaning to this story. So first of all, just the significance of 7 days of creation. That many times in the biblical imagination, numbers aren't merely to identify a quantity so much as they are symbolic. That numbers represent something. So 7, in the biblical understanding and worldview, 7 is a number that's symbolic of wholeness, of perfection, of totality, of fulfillment, and is also a number of covenant, representing covenant. Because first of all, often when the Bible talks about forming a covenant, it often talks about cutting a covenant. Sometimes you cut a deal, you cut a covenant. That the word for cut and the word for 7 are actually very closely related in Hebrew. And actually that carries over into our English language. The word 7 as well as the word sever, which means to cut, are related words. But that also, that 7 also represents covenant because it's the relation between 4 and 3. That 4 is a number that often in the Bible represents the earth, the world. We talk about the 4 corners of the earth, north, south, east, and west. And that 3 is a number that is always associated with representing the divine. And 3 and 4 in relationship, when you add them together, make 7. So this is all comes into play when it's using 7 to tell about the story of creation. Now also, in this unfolding of creation, it's not just God decided to make random things this day. Well, I guess I'll make light this day. I guess I'll make animals this day. But there's actually a poetic logic to the whole thing of how it lines up. Which brings me to my visual diagram behind me. So I have 6 boxes here for the 6 days that he created. And of course, on the 7th day, he rested. But on these days, it talks about in the beginning, the very first line of the Bible, it talks about that in the beginning the earth was formless and void. That there was darkness over the abyss and the mighty wind sweeping over the waters. That it was formless and void. I'm just going to write that down here, formless and void. And if you can't see, don't worry, you can come look at this afterwards, but my art's not going to be that great. But so formless and void. So first, God had to give form and shape to the universe. And then that it was void, empty, and had to be filled. So we'll see this logic that the first 3 days, there's this separation to create the form of the universe. Then the next 3 days, to fill that space. So the first day that God separates the light from the darkness, that God said, let there be light, and there was light. And he separated the light and the darkness. So here I have light and darkness, by the way. That he separated those. Because part of creation, which I'll talk more about at the end, is God bringing light in the darkness, God bringing order to chaos. And the second day, he separates the waters. So he separated the waters, so he had the ocean below and the waters above in the sky, like the rain. But there was a separation of the waters. The waters, by the way, again, in the ancient understanding, water was symbolic of chaos. That if you ever get hit by a wave in the ocean or you see a storm on the ocean, it's very chaotic and it brings about destruction. And that those waters of chaos, but also the one who can dominate the waters of chaos can bring forth life, has power and dominion over the universe. Because back then they couldn't think of a much more powerful force than the raging ocean. Except for God, who tamed the waters of chaos. Those waters of chaos, by the way, play out all throughout scriptures. In creation, but then also the recreation of the world in the story of Noah and the flood. And then in the crossing of the Red Sea by the people of Israel, they passed through the waters of chaos, that they were once a scattering, smattering of people, but passed through the waters of chaos to become a new creation as God's people. And then crossing the River Jordan into the Promised Land. Jesus himself then walking on the waters and calming the sea, the storm on the sea, showing that he is one with God, the one who brings order to chaos. And then the final separation between water and land. This is a little island here. Draw a little tree on it. It's a tree, some grass. Here we go. So in this separation, he created time. Can't write sideways. Time. And then he created a space. Then he created a place to be lived in, a habitat where we could dwell. So these three separations, light out of darkness, order out of chaos. And then, so he gave form to the universe. Now he has to fill this space that he's created, fill the time and space, and that it can be dwelled in. So again, the separation of the light and darkness, he then creates a sun and the moon to rule the light and the darkness. It's still darkness, but it's a moon in there. Follow my picture. Then, of course, with the waters. Then he has to fill the waters. And it says he fills them on the fifth day with fish and with birds in the sky to fill the sky and the sea. And finally, on the sixth day, the final day of creation, again, he created a habitat, so he has to fill it with animals and finally with humanity. Humanity being the height and the crown of creation, who are called to be co-creators with God, to share in this work of creation, which I'll talk a little bit more about in a second. But then on the seventh day, it says that God rested. I'll just put God rested. But this resting isn't because God got so worn out because he was creating and, whew, I'm so tired, I need to sit back and sip on a drink or something, a Kentucky bourbon or something. But rather, this resting is him delighting in his creation. Being able to look and simply rest in the joy of his creation, to delight in it, and for his creation to delight in him. That this seventh day is the fulfillment of the completion of this relationship, this covenant of God with his people. And oh, by the way, then this whole of creation, this universe, is meant to be God's temple where he dwells. That's why I kind of made it look like a little temple here. That all of creation is to be ordered in the temple. The temple of Jerusalem, by the way, they intentionally brought in all this stuff of creation, of nature, brought up and perfected to remember this, that essentially all of creation is God's temple. And so we as human beings, who are made in his image and likeness, then he says, be fruitful and multiply, have dominion over the earth and subdue it. Now that's not for us to go and make a big mess of the earth, but rather that because we're made in the image and likeness of God, that we're to share in this ordering of creation, to be co-creators with him. and to order all creation ultimately for God's glory. First of all, as God comes into chaos and brings about life, he brings light in the darkness and creation and order and peace in the midst of chaos. So we're called and invited into, especially considering that then we had the fall, where creation became ruptured from God and we became ruptured from God. And when you rupture creation from God, who is the source of life, you have chaos, darkness, and destruction. That the redemptive work is bringing that back into God. That us, as part of our priestly call and kingly call as baptized Christians, is sharing as co-creators, bringing back all of creation back into the life of God for his glory and for the thriving of all human life. That this is what we're called to as co-creators. And so as co-creators with God is also to order the created realm, whatever that is for us, all of creation, to delight in God, for us to delight in God. So first of all, every 7 days to come and delight in God. That's why on the seventh day we come back and remember this covenant God made with creation, but also it's for us to bring everything in our lives, everything that's been entrusted to us, to God. So whatever that is, that piece of creation that's been entrusted to us, whatever we do out in the world, whether it's land or crops that we have as part of creation, money or health care for others, buying and selling of goods, whatever that piece of creation that's been entrusted to us, it's not simply for us to use for our own gain, but we're to use everything that's been given to us as co-creators for the glory of God and the thriving of all people. Not just the thriving of me and some people, but to order all things for the good of all people. That's part of our sharing as co-creators of God, being made in his image and likeness. There's a little prayer we do during Mass, a little exchange that we do every week, so often that we probably almost forget about it. But the priest says, "Pray, brothers and sisters, that my sacrifice and yours may be acceptable to God, the Almighty Father." To which we reply, "May the Lord accept this sacrifice at your hands for the praise and glory of his name, for our good and the good of all his holy church." Now, what is the sacrifice that we're talking about? Because I used to think, wow, if that sacrifice is that bread and wine, it didn't cost me much to sacrifice. I didn't sweat over that bread or press those grapes, stomp on them to make wine to send up there. But we're to offer with those gifts, and the reason we have people bringing forward the gifts is to symbolize our offering, that we're to give everything, this stuff that's been entrusted to us of the world, whatever that is, all those goods that are in our care, the things we own, are to be ordered and offered to God. Because none of it is ours at the end of the day. We are merely stewards of this creation. We're to offer that to him week after week. In the second reading today, we hear this scathing warning from James, the Apostle James, about being rich to those who are rich. Be wary. And it's not because there's anything inherently wrong with being rich in and of itself, but that there's great temptations for those who are wealthy and who are rich. But that to whom much is entrusted, much is expected. There's more responsibility to be responsible with the order of creation that's been entrusted to us, those things entrusted to our care that we're to use for the glory of God and the well-being of others, to love God with our heart, mind, soul, and strength, and love our neighbors as ourselves, including with everything we've been given. And that it's tempting, the more we have, the more comfortable we are, it's tempting then to look at all those things and use them for ourselves, or think this is all for me, or this is the stuff that I worked hard to earn for me. And that we can forget the sacred purpose of all of our work. When really, the reality is, everything I have is gift. My very existence is gift. And that God then graciously invites us into not only existence, but then sharing in that ordering of creation, being co-creators with him. So what does this creation story have to do with my life now? Well, everything. It's not just about that God made stuff billions of years or however many hundreds of years ago, but that we're called to be co-creators with him. That everything in our workplace, day to day, day in and day out, isn't just we work over here and worship God over here, but that it's all of this is to be ordered and we come back again and again offering it to Him, saying, here it is, Lord, to be offered for You, for Your glory. Use this for Your glory. We also pray and discern how to do that. The church gives us something called Catholic social teaching to help us to know how we're to order all those things in the world for the good of all people, for every human person, and the glory of God. And not just as co-creators, but also as procreators. That we're given the sacred, beautiful task also of sharing in the creation of His highest creation, which is us, human life. To be entrusted with children, to be parents, and that's why it's wrapped in a sacrament, marriage, the foundation of family. Because this is one of the most sacred and beautiful things we can be entrusted with. To be a mother and a father, to foster the life and growth of children. But that each and every one of us, whether we're biological parents, we're all called to be spiritual mothers and fathers. And that old adage that it takes a village to raise a child. That every life we're called to guard and protect and foster that growth and to share in that as well. So how are we sharing in that our work as co-creators? How are we ordering all those things entrusted to us that we are merely stewards of and to the glory of God? How is it that we're using the gifts entrusted to us to be gifts to God and for others? That what you receive as a gift, you give as a gift. Because nothing we have is ours, but all is gift to be used for the glory of God. We give You praise, Father most holy, for You are great. You have fashioned all Your works in wisdom and in love. You formed man in Your own image and entrusted the whole world to You, so that in serving You alone, the Creator, He might have dominion over all creatures.